In memory of Elena Lagodinova, 1930 to 2017. Chapter 21, A Moment of Redemption. I could never be so mad as to turn knight-errant, for I am aware that the customs of those days when famous knights roamed the world no longer prevail today. Miguel de Cervantes, Don Quixote. About 8 days later, Elena decided to accompany me to the central Sofia cemetery. "I want you to take some historic photos," she said over the phone. "But today is very cold," I said. "Perhaps we should wait until I come back in the summer." "No, we should go today," she said. "I called the Central Cemetery Administration. I have the information." "Are you sure?" I said. "I was out this morning. The wind is terrible." The weather in Sofia had changed drastically since I arrived. The Bulgarians call March a woman's month, because the climate is so mercurial. A week earlier, I had been able to march with the protesters for 3 hours without a coat. But that morning, even 3 layers of clothing failed to keep out the biting cold. The stray dogs huddled together in piles, trying to keep warm. "I am healthy today," Elena said. "I am dressed. We can go whenever you are ready." "Okay," I said. "I will call a taxi and come right over." Elena rarely ventured forth from her apartment. Her husband was dead, and her children were all grown and gone. She still had many friends and former colleagues, but they always came to visit her. Elena went out in her neighborhood for basic groceries and medicines from the pharmacy. I guess that she did not wander too far from home because she feared being hassled. So many young Bulgarians were rude or even hostile to what they called the red grandmothers, and there were plenty of youths who would not hesitate to snatch a purse of an older woman too frail to run after them. If she was willing to go with me today, it might be my only opportunity. I hoped that she would not get sick. Within the hour, Elena and I were dropped off at one of the side entrances to the central Sofia cemetery. We were both wrapped like mummies with sweaters, coats, tights, hats, gloves, scarves, and thick-heeled boots. The wind shrieked. The tops of my shoulders almost touched the bottoms of my ears, and my teeth were clenched. My breath was shallow through my nose. My gums hurt if I tried to inhale through my mouth. "We must buy flowers," Elena said. She led me across the street to where a Roma woman sat inside a small enclosure with 3 glass walls. Elena had a cane, which she leaned her full weight upon with each careful step. She walked like someone afraid to fall down. The flower seller had white lilies, red and white carnations, and some pre-made bouquets of what looked like wildflowers picked from a backyard garden. Elena picked out 3 red carnations. I asked for 2 red and 3 white carnations. I tried to pay for all the flowers, but Elena insisted on paying for her own. "Please," she said, "I want them to be for me." We crossed back to the other side of the street and entered the cemetery. Inside, at a little kiosk, a woman sat selling candles and boxes of matches. Elena stopped here and bought 5 candles and some matches. I did the same. "Now we have to find plot 22, Elena said. She reached into her bag and pulled out a map of the cemetery. She gave it to me. "Find the plot," she said. "I don't have my glasses. Look for the Catholic chapel." I unfolded the map. From where we were standing, it looked like plot 22 was a third of the way into the cemetery. I had never been here before. Looking at the scale of the map and then looking around, I realized that the cemetery was massive. "I think it is down this way," I said, pointing ahead. We walked together in silence. Elena moved slowly, leaning on her cane. I bowed my head against the wind. "After the Catholic chapel, we turn up to the right," I said, after we had been walking for about 10 minutes. The Catholic chapel was a small building at the base of a long lane of plots. "It should be around here," Elena said. We found the wooden sign and the number 22 and surveyed the graves. None of them stood out as being the grave of a famous person. Somehow I had expected the grave would be big and spectacular. Dimitrov had, after all, spent the first 40 years of his death embalmed in a large white marble mausoleum in the middle of Sofia. I walked up and down the length of plot 22. Elena stood on the paved pathway, scanning the names on the graves that she could see. "Do you see it?" she said. No, I said, I don't see it anywhere. Are you sure this is the right plot? That's what they said. Maybe we should ask at the chapel. There might be someone inside. Yes, she said, that is a good idea. I met her on the pathway and we walked back to the chapel. Her steps were already heavier. It is very cold, she said. Yes, I said. I think I heard them say that today will be the coldest day of the winter so far, because of the wind. As I said the word wind, it came blowing all around us. We both squinted and put our heads down. I cupped my gloved hands over my nose and mouth. I made soup, Elena said. We will have hot soup for lunch. I smiled at her. Hot soup will be perfect. The chapel was close. It would have taken me less than a minute to walk there at my pace, but with Elena, it took almost 5. When we got to the chapel, there was a woman tending the candelabras. Good day, said Elena. The woman smiled at us. Good day, she said. Can you tell us where we can find the grave of Georgi Dimitrov? Elena said. I was there many years ago, but I do not remember. The woman looked at Elena and then me. She noticed the red and white carnations that we held. We did not look like vandals. It is very hard to explain, she said. I'll take you there. Just give me a minute. The woman left the chapel and returned a moment later wearing a coat, hat, and gloves. It is very cold, she said. Maybe the coldest day this winter, Elena said. Follow me, the woman said. The woman from the chapel had shoulder-length gray blonde hair. I guessed that she was in her late 50s or early 60s. Her pace was initially fast, but she slowed when she realized how difficult it was for Elena to walk. She was accustomed to dealing with the elderly. The grave is not well marked, the woman said. They didn't want it to be disturbed. I knew that Veneta brought buses full of Greek tourists to the gravesite in the summers, so it could not be that well guarded of a secret. But the possibility of vandalism was probably higher than I imagined. While many Bulgarians saw Dimitrov as a national hero, others thought he embodied everything wrong with Bulgaria. He was a great man to some and a villain to others. The woman led us down the pavement. She turned into Plot 22. The narrowest of footpaths divided the graves, which were crammed so close together in the plot. She led us 3 rows deep, and I let Elena go in front of me so I could steady her if she lost her balance. Here it is, the woman said. She pointed to a roughly cut granite tombstone jutting out of a raised granite platform. The center of the raised platform was filled with earth, and there were weeds growing out of it. On top of the headstone was a picture of the leader, head turned toward the viewer, smoking a pipe. The words on the stone read, Georgi Dimitrov, 1882-1949. There were no other inscriptions. The headstone was not very big. No wonder I had not been able to find it. It was a humble grave. Here it is, Elena said. I'll leave you, the woman said. She hugged herself against the wind. Thank you, I said. Thank you very much, Elena said. My pleasure, the woman said. She smiled at us. Elena stooped down and began clearing some of the weeds from the front of the tombstone. She snapped the long stems of each of her 3 red carnations, leaving only about 8 inches of the stem below the flowers, and drove each stem into the earth in front of the tombstone. I shortened the stems of my carnations, handing them to Elena one by one. She arranged the flowers so that they formed a colorful little cluster below the etching of Dimitrov. Let me light the candles, she said, and then you can take your photos. Elena removed each of her gloves. She pulled the candles out of her purse. She took a match from the box and struck it. The wind blew the flame out. She lit another match, trying to cut the flame from the wind with her hand. The candle lit. Elena pressed the candle into the earth among the flowers, but the wind blew the flame out again. She lit a 3rd match. She relit the candle. This time the wick was already primed. The flame wobbled and bent, but it did not go out. She took a 2nd candle, lit it from the flame of the first, and shoved this candle closer into the headstone. There, she said. She stood up. I took the lens cap off my camera. I set the dial to continuous shooting and snapped a series of pictures of the gravesite. Elena, I said, why don't you stand next to it? I'll take a few of you. Elena adjusted her hat. She dropped her cane off to the side and steadied herself by placing a hand on the top of the tombstone. She looked down at the burning candles. I shot several photos. The sky was white through the bare branches of the trees behind her. Elena seemed lost in her own thoughts. He had a great dream, she said in a low voice. A great idea. Do you think you can take one of me? I said. You can show me how, she said. I walked to her and gave her a quick lesson with my camera. She took a photo of me. A historic photo, she said. The wind blew the candles out. Elena clenched her fists. She replaced her gloves. We spoke for a few moments about the difficulty of getting a grave in the Central Sofia Cemetery. She was very pleased that her brother had been given a place in the new section. Shall we go there next? I said. Elena smiled at me. I would like that, she said. I have saved some candles for him. Is your husband here too? Yes, but in a different section. That one is on the other side. I don't know if I could make it there on a day like today. It is really cold. I wanted to get inside as soon as possible. The muscles in my body were all tense. We left the gravesite. Elena walked with great labor, her cane clacking against the pavement with each step. We should thank that kind woman once more, Elena said as we neared the chapel. We found the woman inside. Thank you very much for your help, Elena said. We would never have been able to find it without your help, I said. The woman heard my accent. You are not Bulgarian, she said. She is an American, Elena said. She is going to write about our great Georgi Dimitrov. The woman tilted her head, intrigued. You must be very cold, she said. Why don't you come inside to my office? I have a heater in there. You can warm yourselves. I looked to Elena. She nodded. She would be happy to sit down for a while. She had been on her feet for about an hour. We followed the woman to her office. It was at the top of a short flight of steps in a low administrative building behind the chapel. Elena struggled up the stairs. A space heater warmed the small room, and a man sat behind a desk looking through a catalog. He appeared to be in his late 20s. Please sit down, the woman said, gesturing to two chairs in front of the desk. Elena and I sat. The woman stood behind the young man. This is my son, Chavdar. He is the resident sculptor here, she said. And I am Amelia. It is very nice to meet you. This is my friend, Kristen, from the United States, Elena said. And I am Elena Lagodinova. The woman's face went pale. Elena Lagodinova? She said. Her eyes were wide. Elena Lagodinova? Elena seemed frightened. She did not go out very often. Yes, she said. My family were the Lagodinovs from Razlog. Oh my God, Amelia said. Her mouth hung open. I didn't recognize you. Elena looked down. The years have changed me. I didn't know you were still alive, Amelia said. I'm still standing, Elena said. Chavdar, Amelia said to her son. This is Elena Lagodinova, the Amazon. She was my hero when I was a child. Chavdar looked up at Elena. He seemed unimpressed. Amelia looked to Elena. It was my favorite book about you and your white horse, she said, pressing her hand against her chest. It's such a great pleasure to meet you in person. It was many years ago, Elena said. Amelia turned to her son. I had 3 years maternity leave when you were born because of this woman. Chavdar nodded to Elena. His eyes were distant. Elena rested both of her hands on the top of her cane. We were trying to do something for Bulgaria, for the people, to make a good life. It was a different time. It was a better time, Amelia said. Chavdar looked back down at his catalog and then to me. Would you like to see some photos of my work? He said. Sure, I said, glancing at Elena. She sat watching Chavdar. I took the catalog. I spent a few moments looking through the pages at a variety of different models of tombstones, commenting on how elegant they were. There was a photo of two exquisite white marble angels watching over a modern-looking grave. I realized that Chavdar had real talent, but very few people in Bulgaria could afford to commission this type of elaborate sculpture for their gravesites. We should be going, Elena said. She stood, leaning into her cane to rise to her feet. It's beautiful work, I said to Chapdar. Is there work like this in the United States? He said. The truth was that I didn't really know. I didn't hang around many cemeteries taking in the sculpture. I guess so, I said, shrugging. I would like to go to the United States, Chapdar said, but they won't give me a visa. Emilia shot him a look. Oh, I said. Thank you for letting us come in and get warm, Elena said to Emilia. She offered her hand. Emilia took Elena's hand between both of her own. She shook her head in disbelief. Elena Lagodinova, Emilia said. The Amazon. Really, from my heart, it was an honor to meet you. I watched Emilia's face. She had tears in her eyes. I looked to Elena. She was smiling up at Emilia. A silence filled the room as they stood together, their eyes locked. Chapdar slid his card across the desk toward me. If you know of anyone who needs any sculpture done, please give them my contact information. I took his card. I put it in my pocket. Yes, I will, I said. He stood up. He offered me his hand, and I shook it. He turned to Elena. It was nice to meet you, he said to her. She nodded to him, but did not remove her hand from Emilia's cupped palms. Have a pleasant day, Emilia said. You must keep warm. Elena removed her hand. I went to the door and held it open while she slowly made her way through. Goodbye, Elena said, and thank you. No, Emilia said, thank you. Emerging from the heated office was painful. The air outside was so raw it felt like I was inhaling knives. I hunched forward, pulling my collar up around my scarf. Elena walked with even greater effort. My brother is down this lane, she said. And then we will go home and have soup. I nodded. I would be leaving Bulgaria the following day. I had to pack, but I would have some time in the morning before the flight. I just really wanted to be indoors. The day seemed to be getting colder. We walked together, side by side, without speaking for a few hundred meters. Elena's breath became heavy. She stopped to rest, leaning on her cane. She looked at me. She knew who I was, Elena said. She remembered. I nodded. Elena smiled. It was the wide grin of a proud child. She lifted her chin, then turned to walk on, still smiling.